Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Discover how you can take charge of the all-new Corsa E on opel.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Some interesting news in there. The President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has warned the pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca that it must meet its contractual obligations in delivery supplies of the COVID-19 vaccine. The President of the Commission spoke to AstraZeneca Chief Executive Pascal Sorio by phone this morning, and her spokesperson said she made it clear she expects AstraZeneca to deliver on the contractual arrangements foreseen in the advanced purchasing agreement. So it seems that a promise was made that couldn't be fulfilled. So let's see what comes from that. But if the supply isn't there, it isn't there. Dr. David Coleman, clinical child psychologist, is in our Limerick studio to answer your questions about children and parenting. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us. It's good to talk to you again. We're getting so many questions in for you, and you can still get in touch by texting 51551 or email todaycb@rte.ie. Now, David, we want to start with homeschooling because I know that's front of mind for so many people. Today and every day at the moment. This person is parenting alone and homeschooling four boys. The primary school is sending full weekly timetables in every subject. I'm also teaching 14 classes at second level, a combination of live classes and assignments. The preparation and correction workload is horrendous. I'm cooking meals, I'm doing laundry, I'm tidying, I'm shopping. I try to get out for a cycle or a walk every day. The two teens have their moments, and the two little ones would much rather play in their den than sit at the table doing homework. I have no family bubble nearby. I'm exhausted and I'm cracking. What do I prioritise and how? I just want us all to be sane and not too far behind at the end of all of this.
Oh my goodness, your heart would just go out to that mum. I think the key there almost is her last line, you know, which is about staying sane. And I would certainly prioritise the staying sane ahead of, you know, the academic performance of the boys. Just, you know, I've said it before, I think, you know, if we're not in a position to mind ourselves in some way, then we're certainly never going to be in a position to mind our kids as well. So, I mean, her first priority is actually probably in relation to her own job, in as much as without that job, then, you know, everything falls apart for the whole family. And that's the reality. You know, that income that she has is critical to their survival. So that means that if she's prioritizing her own work, then I would suggest that the schoolwork that's coming home for her boys then is less of a priority for her. I also think, did she say that two of them were teenagers? I mean,
yes.
Certainly with teenagers, I mean, they can be, you know, healthily involved in the various chores around the house, whether that be the cooking itself. In my experience, most young teenage lads, you know, get a bit of a kick out of cooking and are actually quite good at it when they're given a bit of time and space and are happy to start looking up Instagram for all sorts of tips and tricks and ideas and recipes. What else? What's the other bit you need for cooking? Recipes. So who knows? Her two lads could become really creative with that. But even then, when it comes to the cleaning up and the tidying, I think it is time to have a bit of a sit down as a family and for her not to feel like this is a solo effort, but that actually there are five of them in the family, even if two of them are a little bit younger, but that actually this is all about pulling together and this is about a bit of a communal effort. And I think for that mum, not necessarily to say, oh, I can't cope, because that might be a bit distressing or frightening even for the younger two, but certainly to say, look, you know, we are all under pressure. There is a huge amount to get done. You've all seen that I have various responsibilities and commitments in terms of work. And that means then that other things need to happen in terms of how we work together as a family. And I think if she approaches it in that way as well, she may find that actually, you know, the kids do step up a little bit. And rather than kind of leaving it to her to kind of organise everything for them all, they may well be able to do a little bit in terms of supporting her. But certainly I would prioritise what's key for her, because once she has her needs met, and so getting out for those walks and all that kind of stuff, that is critical in terms of a little bit of headspace. So when she can meet some of those needs, then she'll be always in a better position then to meet the needs of the kids.
Okay, I have a 2.5-year-old girl now, the subject of this next question. She has been refusing to eat without a huge amount of fuss and attention. She holds each bite in her mouth for more than 10 minutes, refusing to chew it. This is at every meal. She's generally happy to be spoon-fed, but she still isn't a great eater. Now, it's important to say she does have some food issues, peanut allergy, possibly gluten and other others. She's skin dryness and sometimes has a rash since infancy. She sleeps well. We're frustrated with the time it takes because both parents are working from home and they have a five-year-old who they're also trying to homeschool. Any advice on that one, David?
So interesting that I think the mum even commented that you know, maybe she was holding the food in her mouth, was it, for about 10 minutes,
yeah,
looking for attention. And it does sound to me that the issues may be less about the food and a little bit more about kind of control. Certainly, I mean, an awful lot of food and eating issues do start in toddlerhood. I mean, you know, generally from about the age of what, 9 months to a year, most children will show some interest in starting to feed themselves. So they'll want to be touching their food and bring it up to their own mouth. Very messy, absolutely frustrating for most parents as well. Food ends up more often all over the surfaces and the floor and the face of their child than actually in their child's stomach. But still, you know, a bit of fun for the child. That, because that process is difficult, sometimes we then end up, you know, we perhaps feed them for longer than they need to be fed. They get into the habit of being fed, then they lose interest in trying to feed themselves, or they realise that actually when we're feeding them, they have a lot more control, and so they can refuse the food, they can turn their head away. If they really are unhappy, they can spit food out. And that then sets up its own negative cycle. And I just wonder if some of that has begun to happen for this family, that actually it's more about the kind of the power and that this little girl knows that she has a lot of power when it comes to the food. It may be the only time, if they are as busy as she suggests with their own work and with their other child, that this may be the only way in which this 2.5-year-old really gets kind of noticed, or this is almost like her time to shine, even though it's albeit in a negative way. So I would suggest maybe taking the pressure off. And, you know, a 2.5-year-old, she's otherwise healthy and is normal weight, and you can check it out with your GP. But, you know, if you leave her to her own devices, if you make the food available to her and then leave her to sort it out for herself, chances are she will come back when she's hungry. So it may be that she doesn't eat at the mealtime, almost just to prove to you that you can't make her eat. But then if you have either the same dinner reheated for her, or you have some other healthy snack that you're happy with for her to eat available to her at other times, she will eat and she will get her nutrition in that way. And that might be a way to just shift or break that kind of power and control stuff that's going on.
So don't focus too much on the mealtime.
Exactly. Focus less on the eating, focus more on the social bit. So have a bit of chat and a bit of banter at the dinner time. If you can at all, eat as a family as well. So if the four of them are eating together, that would be easier than if the two younger ones, the two children, are being kind of fed together. And so they never see, you know, their parents eating. And it's really important that children see how we eat and the way in which we eat. And, you know, some of the social rules that we have about eating and, you know, holding food, spitting food, you know, all that kind of stuff. They need to see it. And so much better that we have family meal times if we can at all, if we can work it into the schedule. But yeah, absolutely, don't focus so much on what she's actually consuming. Focus more just on having her there, including her in the mealtimes, making the food available. Whatever she eats, she eats. Don't spoon feed her. And then if she comes back looking for more food later on in the evening, I would make that available. It's not that you're starving her or not letting her eat if she doesn't eat at the mealtimes. But just, you know, I think she will start to eat then and will enjoy the mealtimes a lot more.
David, I have two queries in about tics, physical tics. This one first. My daughter has intermittent tics. She will twitch her eyes nonstop or else jerk her head. She may do it for a period of months and then stop, but it comes back. She has a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. Are they related?
Yes and no. I think sometimes you will find that some children with autism spectrum disorder, ASD, and so Asperger's is like a high functioning autism spectrum disorder. They do have some behavioural routines or habits that they do. And so sometimes that can be linked to the ASD. But generally speaking, with behavioural tics, again, they're not always, but sometimes they're linked to anxieties. But as I say, they're not always. The key bit generally with a behavioural tic or a physical tic is that we bring our child's attention to it. So we let them know that we see it. And then we try to give them some other behaviour that's less problematic for them to do instead, that acts almost to interrupt or just again break that habit. So it's sometimes called habit reversal therapy, HRT, not to be confused with the other HRT. And mm-hmm. But it's, you know, so if it was the case that it was a skin picking, for example, well, that's going to be damaging to a child's skin. So you might get them to do something else, maybe putting an elastic band on their wrist, and that they snap the elastic band instead of picking at the scab that's forming. If it's to do with you know, something else again where they're maybe scratching at their head or something, you know, you get them to instead give themselves a stroke, or you might introduce something, you know, with creams that's about soothing and nurturing a little bit more than the kind of the heart scratching. So that might be the way to do it for that child as well, just to see, is there some other behavior that you can do when you bring her attention to it, that you can just distract her to doing something different else. that breaks the habit.
There's a 9-year-old boy as well. He's had occasional habits in the past, like touching the corner of the table every time he passes, or having to give even numbers of kisses to his dad. But in the last 2 weeks, he started this annoying, according to the parent, nodding habit. It's really repetitive. When asked, he says it's because his hair is too long. He won't agree to let me trim it. Even on Zoom classes, we see him nodding away, and I wonder if it annoys the teacher. Have you any idea on how to stop it?
So interestingly, the first two things there, in terms of having, you know, to give even numbers of kisses and touching the table, the corner of the table as he passed, those seemed a little bit more akin to something like OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, where a child might have a habit that if they don't do the habit, then they fear something bad might happen. But with regard to the hair flick, it does sound like it's just developed because he's got hair in his eyes. And so, you know, I think for the parents, that might be one to ignore and not pay too much heed to it. You know, sooner or later, we'll all be able to get out and get back to the hairdressers. Or, as you say, you may end up, just while he's sleeping some night, come in and snip away some of the fringe that's causing the hair in his eyes, and that might stop the flicking. But I would...
I just say, if I did that, I'd get in so much trouble.
Yeah, well, you know, there are certain things that that we have to do. But, I mean, you can give him plenty of options, plenty of warning that that this might be something, although that'll probably introduce some kind of sleep issue then, because you'd be afraid to go to sleep in case his mother comes at him with scissors in the night. But, so yeah, okay, maybe don't do the snipping of the fringe in the
night. Put up with it, I think, maybe. But you're saying you maybe should be concerned about the other OCD type behaviours that he
was
displaying.
Well, they sound like they've passed a little bit, but I guess it's just more in terms of maybe understanding what that might be about. And so if that's the case, then, you know, again, typically OCD has an underlying anxiety that's part of it. So it may well be that they need to be thinking a little bit more about anxieties and worries, and so when he's stressed, do they notice that there are certain behaviours or things that he does more, and that might help with the understanding, and that would then point to maybe the better way to approach it, whether it's about dealing with the underlying anxiety, which can be really effective, or whether it may be more about trying to, again, just distract him away from the particular habit that he does and introduce something that's a little bit less problematic.
Well, you've prompted me now to move to this one, because I'd say this is common enough as well. It's an older boy, he's 15, he's finding nighttime really hard. Last week he came downstairs and said, I think I have anxiety. He'd been Googling his symptoms and he really misses school and sports. We live in the country, he's not seeing anyone. Lockdown has been really tough for him. His head is racing. He's having what he calls bad thoughts and he can't get them out of his head. So this parent is trying to get him to take deep breaths in and out, but is really worried, obviously, that the anxiety and not sleeping properly will become a regular thing. He's due to sit his junior cert. He doesn't seem really worried about that, she says. It's more the whole situation with COVID that he feels this anxiety is his fault.
Oh, goodness. I, to be honest, I'd be almost less worried about the fact that he may feel anxious at times and more worried about the fact that he seems to feel that this anxiety is his fault, that in some ways he's creating it. Sometimes it's really helpful for young people when we can explain to them the nature of anxiety. And so anxiety is critically useful to all of us. If we didn't have the capacity to become anxious, then we could end up in some really dangerous situations. So anxiety is a really functional, useful thing for humans to have. And I think sometimes when children and teenagers realise that, it makes a difference for them, and it may well make a difference for this young lad, because I think sometimes we hear people saying, you know, I have anxiety, as if it's almost like this thing that got given to people, you know. And sometimes if we think about it that more, I feel anxious, it helps to explain again just that context, that, you know, the current circumstances, the level of uncertainty that's out there for us. So even if he's not worried about his actual junior cert, you know, there's so much other change that has gone on for this young lad, no more than for his family, that with that level of uncertainty, anxiety is almost to be expected. I mean, I can't imagine there are too many people in Ireland who haven't experienced some level of anxiety or some kind of worry about something that has changed because of coronavirus. So the anxiety itself is quite natural, quite normal. And maybe if he understood that, then that would also allow him to be a little bit more open with some of the tools like the breathing, or, you know, there's lots of other mindfulness techniques or meditative techniques that can be really helpful in terms of that thinking process where a child feels that they're getting these bad thoughts. And so that will allow them, again, just to move away from the negative thinking and hopefully move towards something a little bit more positive. positive.
David, we're going to leave it there for this morning, but you're going to be back with us in 2 weeks' time. We're talking to you a little more often at the moment because we know that people have a few more problems because of homeschooling and all of the stress around COVID. So we will speak to you in 2 weeks. But for now, thank you very much, Dr. David Coleman. And if you have questions for David, don't forget, get them into us on email, todaycb@rte.ie.